Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
Hey, everyone. It's Asten Herndon, political reporter for The New York Times. When I became a journalist, I made a promise to my readers, like the way that doctors take an oath to their patients. I committed to bringing the truth to light, no matter which party, business, organization, or person I'm reporting on. I have to be persistent. I have to do research, and I have to push back when someone tries to hide or spin the facts. And I know I'm going to write stories that both Democrats and Republicans don't like. But that's what The New York Times has been doing for more than a century, and that's what we're going to keep doing. We believe the public deserves the right to make up their mind based on the facts. So if you want to support this kind of work, you can subscribe to The New York Times at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Joe Coscarelli, and you're listening to the New York Times Popcast, your dusty baseball cap of music news and criticism.
I got a piece of land out in the countryside. Lay back and smell the sun, warm up the Georgia pie. Feels so good to be taking it easy. Why would I ever leave? Because I know I got some good friends that live.
We were just listening to Zach Brown Band.
Yeah, we were.
Homegrown from their new album, Jekyll and Hyde.
Mm-hmm.
Jekyll plus Hyde. Yeah. Jekyll plus Hyde.
Yeah, I bet a lot of thinking went in, a lot of meetings probably went into the using the plus sign as opposed to an ampersand.
Yeah, what does that signify to you?
Zach Brown would like you to think that he's something he's not, which is clever.
We're here with John Caramonica, pop critic at The New York Times.
for now. Depends how this goes, I suppose.
John, tell us about this new Zach Brown record.
Yeah. Well, as with all artists with an oeuvre of this size, you really can't talk about the new Zach Brown record without talking about OG Zach Brown Band records. So let's go back 8-9 years. Zach Brown Band was doing sort of the Southern touring circuit, you know, colleges. And Zach Brown Band is not, I mean, we're talking about a country group right now, but Zach Brown Band is fundamentally not a country group, not in the way that we conceive of modern country. He basically had a crossover hit in 2008, which is called Chicken Fried. Chicken Fried is a deeply loathsome song, like an unbearable, trite, 3 minutes of Southern cliche.
One of these listings of empty signifiers that are supposed to be comforting to a generic American.
Exactly. I suppose it was a good job. It did a good job of that because it was wildly successful. It's worth saying at this point, this was very early in my time at the paper. Zach Brown Band came to the Bowery Ballroom.
A home of country music.
Yeah, I mean, it was unusual. I mean, that actually should have been a bit of a siren to me. In 08, a lot of country acts weren't playing New York. So Zach Brown Band came to New York to play the Bowery. And I was like, oh yeah, I'm getting the AK out. Like we're gonna put a bullet in these guys because this is just unacceptable.
Metaphorically,
yes, if you say so. And so I went like very, very ready to just assassinate them. And
easy to write off with a song like that.
I thought it would be like 400 words about how terrible they were, and like 25 words about how popular they were. And they played an astonishingly long, astonishingly good set. This is a band that, you know, is very, it's road tested, it's bar tested, it's party tested. All the individual members were really, I thought, very strong musicians. Guitar player was great. The bassist was great. Zach Brown is not much of a singer, but he's a good band leader. Maybe Chicken Fried got a minute and a half or a 2 minute run somewhere in the middle of the set. Like, it wasn't even what the buildup was to. It was something they'd sort of dispensed with it. And I was like, oh, okay, so these guys are onto something, or at least they stumbled onto something, if nothing else. And so I developed this kind of grudging respect for Zach Brown Band. I still didn't really love the record, but it was very clear that as a band, they had a lot of facility. Unfortunately, what's happened to that group over the last 5 or 6 years is, you know, they're on a major country label. They're making records that are closer and closer to the country mean, even though they themselves are not necessarily a true country band in like the 2000s sense. In the last maybe year and a half, I think they've been starting to chafe, and they're starting to, I mean, I don't want to say go weird, because like this is not a band that's like really capable of going weird.
But weird for country.
Yeah. Zach Brownman is interesting because they are a band that has found all the success in country, but fundamentally they're dissenters, and country is in a time right now where dissenters are actually ruling the roost.
So before we talk about how Zach Brownman fits into it, let's sort of lay the landscape of Nashville at the moment.
So if you looked at sort of a post-Garth Brooks male country, you know, pop is increasingly accepted in country music, but you still had in the 2000s, you had your sort of the new classicist, you know, George Strait was still very popular, Alan Jackson, folks like that. Then you sort of bleed into your Tim McGraws and guys of that era.
Boots and cowboy hats.
Yes. And who are fundamentally, you know, they're handsome guys. They're a little bit on the rugged side, and they're capable of giving you sort of Southern platitude, or they're giving you a love song. They can do both because they're not strictly speaking coming from a solely rural perspective in their music. And then what's happened in the last few years is the kind of upstarts started coming up. Your Luke Bryans, your Florida Georgia Line. We're talking about male country. Taylor and female country is a totally different conversation. You saw this shift, and this is something I wrote about like 3 or 4 years ago, but you saw this shift from cowboy hats. I mean, everybody in 2006 was wearing a cowboy hat, and everybody in 2000,
everybody.
Literally everybody, me included. And then by 2011 or 2012, it's baseball caps. It's, as you said, it's dusty ball caps. It's really beat up. They're not there to signify sports. They're there to signify maybe like I work on my truck on a Saturday afternoon, and like this is what I do to hold my hair down. And it created this implied divide, this implied generational divide. At this moment in 2015, the baseball cap guys, or the sort of baseball cap 2.0 guys, are actually ruling the roost. I can't think of a person wearing a cowboy hat besides George Strait, who just keeps churning out hit after hit after hit in like some kind of weird, like, it's tough to know why people still let George Strait put out hits, even though they're good. But the baseball cap guys, or the sons of the baseball cap guys, are the people in charge. Zach Brown Band, interestingly, doesn't fit into either of those paradigms. And I know later we're going to talk a little bit about Tyler Farr, who's another guy who doesn't wear a hat. Zach Brown wears a hat, a different hat. On the cover of the album, isn't he wearing like a fedora or something?
Yeah, it's a non-traditional hat, we'll put it that way.
Like a pork fedora, a fedorify. It's somewhere like that. Yeah, there's a store near my house in Brooklyn called Gorin Brothers, and it looks like something they sell.
Tyler Farr frequents Gorin
Brothers. No, Zach Brown features Gorin Brothers. Yes. Yes. Zach Brown finds himself in an interesting place where he was a dissenter from the old way of doing things, got famous doing kind of the very obvious mainstream thing, but in his heart knows that that's not for him. But then all these other dissenters doing, being bros, making hip hop crossover.
Right.
Records.
When we talk about insurgents in country music over the last few years, a lot of what we're talking about is the Jason Aldeans of the world, mm-hmm. who the Sam Hunts of the world, who mm-hmm. sort of have this nod to hip hop, which they grew up on because of
these are guys who grew up on hip hop. They grew up on arena rock in so much as it still existed in the 90s. So they think of country as like a big tent thing. They happen to be Southern guys with twangs, but they're taking in sort of all these influences.
But Zach Brown Band has no interest in Drake.
Not that I can tell. No. And Zach Brown Band, I think in his mind, he was like, I am doing the edgy thing because I'm taking in bluegrass. I'm taking in 70s soft rock. I'm taking in, on this album, big band music. All the other, like, I don't want to say actually cool, because it's kind of tough to say if any of these guys are actually cool, but all these other cool guys just straight passed them by because they were like, oh, no, we're on the internet. Maybe you've heard of it. It has all this new music.
Right.
Like, I don't know what your LP collection is like, but, like, my Spotify it's popping.
But does Zach Brown Band need the internet? Aren't they much larger than putting out a mixtape?
Yes. No, I think that's true. I mean, look, I saw Zach Brown Band play Madison Square Garden, like, 3 or 4 years ago, before, this is maybe on their second album or in between the second and third. You know, they have like a wildly successful touring business. They have their own festival where I think Zach Brown or his buddies like cook for the fans. I don't know. I'm not sure I want to eat food that's prepared by Zach Brown. Like, that's Maybe it's just me. But he has a very, very robust touring business. And that fan base, I think, is loyal to him. We were talking about before the show, he's on track to be number one next week with maybe a couple hundred thousand records, which is not a small number, but it's not Drake numbers.
Sure.
You know, it's not Taylor numbers, but it's very sturdy, dedicated fan base. So he doesn't need to be cool.
Right.
But I do think, I would imagine if he looked back from 5 years ago when he was looking at what the future was going to look like, he didn't think that a whole other group of dissenters was going to basically leapfrog him and become the new normal. I think he probably thought there was a better chance that his thing would become the new normal, and it's not.
The other thing we see Zach Brown doing is reaching into rock and roll, having a guest like Chris Cornell on this album. So not only is the album going to be number one on Billboard, but Zach Brown Band's also the second act ever to hit number one on the country airplay charts and the mainstream rock chart at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because we just have this dearth of modern rock bands.
Yeah,
and country can sort of fill that void.
If you are a young, arena-minded, guitar-oriented white male band in 2015, and you're not like a Warped Tour band, basically, you're not a screamo or a metalcore or deathcore band, you're not one of those, who do you have to look to? Like, who's the mainstream rock role models of 2015?
The Foo Fighters.
Right. Well, this sends shivers up my... I mean, literally, there are not two uglier words in the American language. There's really nowhere to look. You know, Nickelback, Hinder, you know, like AWOL Nation, Imagine Drag. I mean, this is not real. None of this is real.
It's not a deep pool.
No. It is also a shallow pool full of shallow things. Like, it's not like it's a cool scene and you're like, wow, there's only five of them, but they're great. There's really just dead. It's still water, like the definition of still water. What's happening is a lot of these country bands are sort of almost smelling the opportunity. And I think a lot of fans who maybe would have gone to see big rock shows in the 90s, maybe they're like, I like the Eagles, and the Eagles are a little country. And like, it's not that far a leap from the Eagles and Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. It's not that crazy to all of a sudden end up at a Zac Brown Band show or a Kenny Chesney show or something like that.
Or a Tyler Farr show.
Right. And I think that's sort of the direction that Tyler Farr is heading. It's interesting that Chris Cornell is a signifier for a guy like Zac Brown, because Chris Cornell is not a signifier of anything other than sort of like mid-90s. I don't want to say mediocrity, but like, you know, Chris Cornell hasn't been actually relevant in like 15 to 20 years. But for Zac Brown,
let's not forget his brief
flirtation with Timbaland. Yeah, of course. Like I said, he hasn't been relevant in 15 to 20. I mean, you know, Timbaland was doing irrelevant things long before Empire. Let's not put it, you know, come on. But, you know, Zac Brown is not picking, I mean, I don't know who the modern male rock star would be, like the dope from Imagine Dragons or whatever, but he's not picking that guy.
Right.
He's picking like a grunge icon. Heavy, heavy, heavy quotation.
But it's not all about toughness, because right before this Chris Cornell song, we have a feature from Sarah Barry Ellis.
A jam. That's not true. Let's come back to Old Girl. But I think your point about Tyler Farr is right, in the sense that whereas Zac Brown maybe fundamentally doesn't have it in him to be a rock star, because he has a really unnuanced voice. He's strangely good at ballads, which I found odd for a guy who doesn't sing that well. He somehow finds the emotion, but he's not a power singer. He doesn't have range. He doesn't have scratch. He doesn't have flexibility. So he has to bring Chris Cornell in. Now, Tyler Farr, who also, both of these guys have albums that came out this week. Tyler Farr is a guy who has a lot of those vocal qualities naturally. I feel like if he had come out in 76, 77, he'd be sort of in a fake Lynyrd Skynyrd band.
Right.
You know,
he's a rock star.
He's basically a rock star who has no rock to do. So he's going to make country rock songs.
Let's listen to a little bit of Tyler Farr. We're going to hear A Guy Walks Into a Bar.
It goes, a guy walks into a bar, orders a drink, sees a girl that catches his eye, ask her if she wants another, to fall for each other and end up lovers at last, cry, hold on tight, make it work for a little while, then one night until the lights fade out into the dark, and a guy walks into a bar.
John, tell us a little bit about Tyler Farr. You saw him this week?
I did, at Irving Plaza, which has increasingly become a place that country acts play, which is weird. So Tyler Farr first kind of started getting attention a couple years ago. He had this song called Redneck Crazy. And I remember at the time thinking, well, this is like a real weird moment to put out a redneck theme record. I mean, you know,
a little bit of a throwback.
Yeah, but like not a 20-year throwback, like a 4 to 6 year throwback. It's, you know, I understand the internet is decreasing our nostalgia cycles, but that seemed like a strange, it almost seemed like it had just been sitting on a shelf for 4 years. Sure. And someone finally decided to put it out. You know, the sort of like peak redneck revival moment of the mid 2000s, your Gretchen Wilsons, your Big and Rich. It seemed like it belonged in that era. But there was a rawness. Tyler Farr is a pretty, I wouldn't say he has a wide range, but he has a lot of power within his natural range. The song is about finding, basically discovering that your partner is cheating on you and then kind of like rolling up on them with your car and shining the lights in the window. Some people accused it of being a little anti-feminist or anti-woman. I mean, it is a raw song. In my mind, what was most interesting about it is there is a toughness and an aggression in the lyric, but there is still a softness in the delivery. It's powerful, but he's singing with softness. To me, that was a really interesting and winning combination. It's not something a lot of guys in country are good at. They typically pick one lane and go there. To me, the person who he's most like, and I talked about this in my piece, the person he's most like is Lee Bryce. Lee Bryce, one of my favorite contemporary country singers. Also, just like a real, like, you know, definitely on some dad bod.
Yeah.
Like,
he can do the tough guy thing.
Yeah.
But he has softness.
Yeah, no, I mean, half of his chest is heart. That's right. Why it's so big, because the heart is just like, it's all over the place. Tyler Farr is probably closest to that, but Tyler Farr, and it was interesting to watch him on stage, because Tyler Farr is like not quite bro-y in the like we get along sense, but he almost like an MMA fighter in a weird way.
No baseball hat.
No hat at all. And I actually did a Google image search on Tyler Farr to see if I could find a picture of him wearing a hat. And I think around the first album, there were a couple pictures of him in a baseball cap. But I think wisely, he's moved into a different space. Now, after Redneck Crazy, he has a couple of more recent hits that are big and on one that's sort of on the verge of becoming big. And all his hits sort of follow similar patterns. Like, they're tough, but they're tender. They're raspy, but they're emotional.
But he's been wronged. He's vulnerable.
Yeah, and he, you know, at his show, he talked about that. And I thought it was, he's a little yappy, if we're being honest. But he did talk about that. And an interesting thing about him, though, is when I heard the second record, I was expecting it to be sort of chock full of songs like that. But actually, the first half of the record is very Southern rock. It has a grit to it from the way the guitars are. Like, every sort of instrument is playing sloppy. And I don't mean sloppy like in a bad way. I mean it's loose at the edges. It's loose at the fringe. I was really impressed because vocally he was keeping up and singing in a powerful, raspy way. And the music was a lot looser than you would expect from a guy signed to Columbia Nashville, basically. So I was expecting to see a lot of that at the concert. The concert was maybe a little bit more straightforward than the album is. But the album kind of proves, in the same way that Zac Brown Band could be theoretically a popular country act without really being a country act, Tyler Farr is a different kind of dissenter. And also not the dissenters of the day. He's not a Luke Bryan. At the encore of the show, he actually made this joke. The drummer was playing he was just looping some kind of beat. And Tyler Farr was talking about dancing. And he's like, oh, I've seen Luke Bryan. Like, I'm going to let Luke Bryan handle that.
Right. And so like, he's not going to dance. He's not going to rap.
No. Although they did play Eminem over the speakers before. But, you know, it's 2015. It's like, doesn't even matter at this point.
Eminem is basically classic rock at
this
point.
I mean, seriously. Yeah, no, he is Skinnered. So Tyler Farr isn't the standard bearer. He's not sort of a post-Alan Jackson, post-George Strait. And he's not the dissenter. He's not Aldean. He's not Luke Bryan. Maybe a touch of Aldean, but much more rock-oriented. And he himself is a dissenter under this big umbrella of country, and he's finding success. The reason I kind of thought it would be interesting to talk about these two artists together is we spend a lot of time thinking about country music as an inside versus outside. You're either on top or you're the one fighting. I think the success of both of these artists, to me, shows that umbrella is like practically non-existent. Like, it's not there. Because if Tyler Farr can get his money and Zac Brown can get his money, it's no problem. Luke Bryan's not losing anything by Tyler Farr's success.
Does that mean the tent has gotten bigger?
Yes. I mean, the tent has definitely gotten bigger to the point where it's like the Sahara tent at Coachella.
So it's just...
There's no walls to it.
Right.
There's notionally a top to it, but there's things spilling out at all the sides. I mean, that's probably a good thing for country music. I mean, hopefully what that means is Nashville labels will take risks and sign stranger people. I do think ultimately they won't, but it's notable to me that like a guy like Tyler Farr, who if you just heard his record cold and you didn't know it was a major label, you might think it was maybe on coming out through 30 Tigers, like the Nashville independent distributor. Like it sounds something that's a little bit closer. It's not like a Sturgill record or a John Moreland record or anything like that, but it is to the left of what's normal. Somehow it's on Columbia Nashville. Somehow he has a couple of number one country hits under his belt, and maybe he's about to have a third one. And country is wide enough to accommodate that, at least for now. That's a lot of male narratives. You know, country is still failing miserably on female
right.
narratives.
So how much of this, you know, identity crisis among the men in country has to do with what the women are doing?
Well, I think you've seen this little it's almost weirdly been a hiccup in the last 12 months of a female counter narrative to the main male narrative. I say hiccup because I've already starting to see it come. The retreat is already kind of in effect.
If you look at the airplay chart this week, the top 12 songs are by men mm-hmm. until you get to a Carrie Underwood song.
Sure. And I think the options, I mean, even when you cross over and look, if you were to just do an airplay chart that was purely female singers, you'd have Carrie, you'd have Miranda.
Little bit of Reba.
God willing. But then you have, I wrote about this in Playlist a couple weeks ago, you have Mickey Guyton, you have Kelsey Ballerini, Jana Kramer sort of hangs around all the time. But they are not doing counter-narrative records. They're doing straight early to mid-2000s, lonesome, winsome girl records.
Sure.
And those are fine. Like, I like the Mickey Guyton song, I think is really good. On a basic level, there isn't that level of diversity. You don't have a female Aldean, you don't have a female Tyler Farr. Like you, there isn't that room yet. Even with the success of Kacey Musgraves or Maddie and Tay or folks like that, Taylor has cast this very long shadow. A lot of people feel weird about either being in it or trying to get out of it. It's kind of a lose-lose proposition.
Only Taylor gets to have both.
Yeah. To her credit, there's no male country singer who casts as wide or as sort of a damaging a shadow as Taylor does over female country. But these male narratives, the idea that country labels will continue to support this sort of panoply of male narratives while female narratives are like dying on the vine, I mean, that tells you basically what you need to know about country music in 2015.
That seems like as good of a place as any to end. Do you want to wrap it up, John?
Yeah, sure. Let's. I think we should close out with a song that I know is close to your heart. Let's listen to Zac Brown Band with your girl, Sarah Bareilles. Actually, shouts to Sarah Bareilles, though.
Still around.
I want to say this. I mess with Sarah Bareilles. I think Sarah Bareilles, there's a brightness and an energy to Sarah Bareilles that I'm not mad at. I am mad at her on this song, and I know you're mad at her on this song. So I think it's really only right that we both subject ourselves to it right now. So this is Mango Tree
for the real country heads,
for the true flames. Mango Tree, Zac Brown Band, and Sarah Bareilles.
Nobody else will do, 'cause baby, you're the only one for me. Underneath the mango tree.
Thank you for listening to the New York Times podcast. Thank you to John Caramonica. You can read him on Tyler Farr and Zac Brown Band at nytimes.com/music. Subscribe to us on iTunes and check out our Spotify playlist. Our producers are Jeremy Egner and Jocelyn Gonzalez. And we'll be back next week.